The chapter we have been considering in the fourth volume is the preparation of the elements for the great fire. The pastor speaks of how the nations are assembled, quote, in common interest and activity, no longer isolated as in previous centuries. And we see how international travel, communication, language barriers being overcome, and commerce have bound the nations of the world together today and made all quite dependent upon each other. No longer are any nations isolated and totally self-sufficient. Yes, this is by design that the nations can be assembled and the elements prepared for the great fire, the great time of trouble. Zephaniah 3:8. Wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured by the fire of my jealousy. Pastor Russell then concluded that even though the nations are assembled in common interest and activity, they are not united in brotherly love, for selfishness marks every step of this progress. We are reminded of how selfishness is the main element that has gathered the nations and has them headed straight for a universal outcry of the people for justice. And the people see the only path they have for any relief is revolution. This would all be very troubling, except we know that God is the great commander who now gathers the nations and assembles the kingdoms with the purpose of transferring earth's dominion to him whose right it is in Christ's kingdom. One of the elements that the pastor mentions as provoking the people to revolution and anarchy is what he interpreted from Luke 17:26. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. Genesis chapter 6 tells us that previous to the end of the first dispensation, a superhuman influence had entered into the world, and power from an angelic source had produced very undesirable conditions to the extent of bringing into existence an unauthorized race who were powerful, self-serving giants. The pastor's supposition was that in the last days, there would be a counterpart of the giants, as there was in the days of Noah, even if not specifically mentioned by Luke. And the pastor rightly pointed to certain giant companies in his day as a possible corresponding element to the giants of Noah's day. Those giant monopolies, or trusts, tightly controlled the costs for goods and services and crowded out competition in a most forceful way. They imposed on the people no real options or choices for the goods people needed. Like the Nephilim, these modern giants were simply big, overbearing bullies, which defied attempts by trade unions and regulatory agencies to moderate their unfair trade practices and employee treatment. This kind of behavior suggests an evil spirit influence on the hearts and minds of those men in power. Ephesians 6:12, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. The pastor also points out how the individuals who formed these tyrannical monopolies first received enlightenment and advantage because of being in a civilized society based on Christian principles and wisdom. So how deplorable it is that they would misuse that advantage in such a selfish way. But the behavior fits the picture of the Nephilim in Noah's time. A hybrid product of the far superior angels mixing with humans, corresponding to today's hybrid giants being begotten by Christian enlightenment, acting in combination with the selfish hearts of fallen men. Examples of the big trusts in the late 1800s were the steel and rail industries, ruled by Rockefeller and Carnegie, and banking systems owned by J.P. Morgan. These modern giants in the pastor's day were a real menace and threat to the nation, similar to the literal giants that threatened the world with violence in Noah's day. As the Nephilim could not be controlled by mere humans in Noah's day, we are assured that it again will take divine intervention to fully remove these powerful and cunning modern corporate giants. A specific example. In 1892, there was in America the Homestead Steel Strike. Now, I'm citing this example as the kind of provocation that will bring about an uncontainable uprising in the future by the Lord's great army. Located just across the river from the Carnegie-Pittsburgh steel plant was the scene of a brutal battle between the Iron and Steel Workers Union and Carnegie's Pittsburgh Steel, which wanted to break the union's power and punish union members. Pittsburgh Steel announced pay cuts, refused to negotiate with the union, locked workers out of the plant, and then sent in private police to bully the union strikers. The whole thing became a bloody gunfight. Along with the use of the Pennsylvania State Militia, the workers' union was crushed. This all showed how hard it was to overcome a giant, a strong company that prospered under the lack of government regulations or meaningful enforcement. Another example of the influence of corporate giants was the Great Steel Strike of 1919. During World War I, industrial companies, labor unions, and the U.S. government joined together to form the War Labor Board, an organization that brokered a deal to stave off strikes in exchange for improved labor conditions. A consortium of unions that included the American Federation of Labor and the Iron, Steel, and Tin Workers Union called for a strike of the workers at U.S. Steel, the nation's biggest employer and one that refused to recognize unions. 350,000 workers walked off the job in six states. While the strike temporarily paralyzed steel production, it eventually was crushed. Police and company hired thugs beat up the picketers. Again, the workers and unions suffered a great defeat and a big setback for the labor movement. So you can see why the brethren in the pastor's day expected that since the giants of the world that was before the flood were swept away in the flood waters, likewise, these corporate giants would soon be swept away in the coming equivalent to the flood, the symbolic fire of anarchy. Yes, monopolies and trusts were prevalent in the pastor's day, but we also want to note that by the early 1900s, laws and other restrictive measures to prevent monopolies were coming about. Antitrust laws and the formation of more labor unions. So even though it had been previously assumed that a great revolution leading to global anarchy was imminent by 1914, by the early 1900s, there were signs that it may be necessary to adjust the assumption of that original time frame. Let me explain. As far back as 1890, the Sherman Antitrust Act made monopolies and trusts illegal. In the early 1900s, President Theodore Roosevelt empowered several federal regulatory commissions to tear down the big monopolistic trusts. And President Woodrow Wilson, in a 1912 campaign speech, actually referenced the phrase, quote, "There were giants in those days, and America was created to break every kind of monopoly and to set men free upon a footing of equality, upon a footing of opportunity to match their brains and their energies," end of quote. In 1914, the Clayton Antitrust Act expanded the Sherman Act by prohibiting price discrimination. New consumer welfare standards were then adopted in the 1970s. And as late as 2021, an executive order by the President of the United States established the White House Competition Council to combat monopolistic activities and cultivate greater competition in the marketplace. In fact, in 2021, six antitrust bills were passed, which were designed to closely examine whether big tech company mergers would stifle competition. And Congress admits that in their assessment, not all mergers are bad for the public. And some large corporations have demonstrated that they are socially responsible. So, because of these changes, applying the term giants doesn't exactly apply to large businesses today on the same scale as in the pastor's day. Yes, some large corporations today may attempt to take selfish advantage of the public by trying to control the marketplace, but the government and trade unions of this time period have demonstrated that regulations and trade unions are partially effective in limiting the unfair behavior of the large companies. So, government regulations and trade union negotiations today still seem to satisfy the cries for justice, thus averting an uprising of the Lord's great army. It is interesting that Brother Russell, in the year 1916, when speculating about Elijah's mantle and the smiting of the Jordan River, was still waiting for the point when he could conclusively identify the antitype of that series of events. He could certainly see a great degree of the gathering of the nations and the preparation of the elements along with the outrage of the people. But what was the antitype of the actual smiting of the waters? Were all the pieces of this impending event fully in place so that some incident and maybe truth message would compel the people into an unstoppable anarchistic uprising? Well, I'm not saying that we should change the idea of big business being the giants, but today these giants are not as easily identified as the monopolies and trusts of the past. Outwardly, big business seems to have been restrained by regulations. However, let us point out that many big companies are still not voluntarily and benevolently cooperating for the public good. They still have tremendous power and selfish influence in politics, government, and social media. For example, in 2021, Congress set laws in place to force the CEOs of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google to be more transparent in business practices. This all sounds somewhat positive, but in actuality, the government regulators admit getting bogged down in technicalities, definitions of terms, and resistance to cooperate on the part of those giant companies. In other words, the giants in industry have not really gone away, but are now learning how to work around the regulations. Let's review a real example of how big business today can stifle competition and get around some of the anti-monopoly regulations. In 2009, Amazon launched a price war against a competitor called diapers.com, something over which Amazon was willing to lose $200 million on their own diaper sales in a single month, with the ultimate goal to force the smaller competitor to sell out to Amazon. So Amazon might say, "What's wrong with that? We are just being competitive." Here we see the dispute between the corporate versus the regulatory agency perspective. The original intention of the law was to keep companies from using unfair business practices. But from the selfish position of the giants, it is simply fair competition. It's important to emphasize again that government regulations and trade union negotiations seem, for now, to somewhat satisfy the cries for justice. But this will only delay the still impending anarchy of the discontented and restless masses, the Lord's great army. In addition to big business, another kind of giant has arisen today in the financial sector. Bankers, stock market speculators, hedge fund operators, and so forth. This new kind of giant, unlike the giants of the earlier years, produce nothing, contribute nothing to society as a whole. They don't make steel. They don't construct buildings. They don't weave cloth. They don't run grocery stores. They just manipulate the financial systems. Lending money, borrowing money, investing in profitable businesses, not to the benefit of the general public, but simply to benefit themselves, or more accurately stated, their rich owners. For instance, when the national economy and job situation was poor, as during the COVID epidemic, the government of the U.S., as well as other countries, tried to ease the pain to the general public and stimulate jobs by pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into the financial sector. The government essentially loaned the banks money at a nearly 0% rate with the theory that the banks would in turn offer low interest loans to the public for low interest home mortgages and low interest loans to small businesses to stimulate the economy. But the theory failed for the most part. Instead of the money trickling down to the small business sector and to the people, the financial institutions instead decided that they would make more money quicker by just investing that government money in the same government bonds the Fed was buying. They knew that with the government setting new low interest rates, the market rate of government bonds would go up. It was a sure thing, a sure way to profit. Former Federal Reserve official Andrew Huszar stated it this way. The Fed's idea was the banks would be taking that money and lending it to the public effectively at lower interest rates. What the banks were doing instead was that they were just investing in the same inflated bonds that the Fed was buying. One government official said that the Federal Reserve money was to be the blood supply for the body of our economy. But instead of the banking system being that lifeline, they were simply the bloodsuckers. The conclusion is that this new giant is also born of selfishness. And even though in somewhat of a new form, it cannot seem to change from the same basic fallen behavior of the other kinds of giants. Andrew Huszar concluded, just because the Fed wanted to do something and wanted to help the average American, it doesn't necessarily mean that Wall Street and the banking system has the same interests. But now, we also want to suggest an additional modern-day analogy to the giants, another correspondency that may share the definition of giants. As we alluded to earlier, the Nephilim were a hybrid of two natures, spiritual and earthly. Mystic Babylon is a hybrid of the nominal church, the nominal spiritual heavens, mixed with the world and earthly governments. Take a look at Revelation 18:9 with the pastor's comments from Volume 3, Thy Kingdom Come, in the 1916 foreword, page 4. And the kings, the political element of earth society, who have committed fornication, illegitimately associated with her, shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke, evidence of her burning, Babylon's destruction. This indicates that the kings will become corrupt by their association with the elements of that harlot, creating that unlawful hybrid of nominal Christianity and state. And like the monopolistic trusts, imposing on the people no choice for the spiritual goods they require, no freedom of religion, no choice but the brand of beliefs that are sanctioned by a newly elected Christian government. Could this really happen? Well, the desire among many Christian groups is certainly there. In 2022, during a political rally for the office of governor in the city of Atlanta, proponents of what is called Christian nationalism chanted, "We, the church, are God's governing body on the earth, and we have been given legal power from heaven and now exercise our authority." How would this happen? If the Western nations become fearful of collapse under a future anarchistic uprising, a real violent outcry of the people for justice, then the Western nations will seek some means to quell the uprising. And they will most likely look to the so-called Christian political element that will claim they can help stabilize the social element because they claim they have considerable influence over the people. So in this scenario, the government would avert a revolt and get stability, and in turn, the conservative Christian element would be given considerable control in the government. Then that controlling party would enact laws to favor their particular Christian views, citing national security as their justification to prohibit the promotion of any ideas that they would deem as a threat to the stability of the nation. Well, even though this scenario is in the speculation category, and it may seem quite impossible to some, we do see that the hybrid of nominal Christianity and state already has a template in Russia that can quickly be transferred to Europe or the United States in times of emergency. In Russia, in 2002 and again in 2016, laws targeted religious groups outside of the Russian Orthodox Church and were justified as anti-terrorism measures. President Vladimir Putin was quoted as saying, "The Russian Orthodox Church is part of a bulwark of Russian nationalism, and anything that undermines that concept is a real threat, whether that is evangelical Protestant missionaries or anything else." Since 2016, several Jehovah's Witnesses groups were shut down and non-Orthodox religious websites have been blocked. All those who defy these new laws are faced with large fines and 6 to 10 years in prison. Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, and so forth have been labeled as extremist, a threat to public order and public security. Evangelization in any manner is prohibited, including email. The new laws make it illegal to preach, proselytize, or hand out religious materials outside of specially designated places, or even to have religious gatherings in people's homes, terming these as gatherings of extremists. The final conclusion of this old order on the earth will be in the same manner as it was with the world that was of Noah's day. That world overflowed with literal water to destroy the evil influence on the earth. A deluge of another sort is about to overwhelm the tyrannical, political, social, financial, and religious institutions of this present time. The shackles of ignorance will be broken and dispelled by the increasing water of truth from our returned Lord. Sufficient light to compel even reasoning minds today to take even violent action to throw off all injustice. Eventually, under the administration of our Lord and the Church, the light from our returned Lord will fill the hearts of all those who desire and appreciate truth and justice. Habakkuk 2:14, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." This is the amen to our lesson. the refuge of lies and evil finally being swept away by the waters of truth. We have spoken about what will happen as the old order on this earth goes down. But we have not spoken yet as to our role in all of this. We should be cautious that all of these chaotic events do not cause fear, which would prompt us to be caught up in the world's struggle. This would be a serious distraction from our real mission as consecrated saints. Remember that Noah, even withstanding ridicule, kept preaching and kept building that ark. Noah had faith in God's words, even though there had never been rain before that time. The analogy for us now is that even though some predicted events may sound unreasonable to many, we should put our trust in the prophetic illustrations in the Bible and the pastor's predictions, rather than in the disinformation swirling around from nominal Christianity. A good guideline to follow is to rule out any prophetic suggestions coming from the nominal churches and internet evangelists. What has been suggested to their minds is most often from the great deceiver. From James 1:12 in the English Standard Version, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised." Brethren, may the Lord bless us all in the months and years ahead, that we be not deceived.